Sometimes I stand in my backyard with a baseball and a bat. I serve up a pitch and I swing real hard. I give that ball a whack. Ooh, I love baseball. And I like to pretend that my yard is a stadium. My fans, they stand on the porch and scream when I wave to them. Ooh, I love baseball. Ooh, I love baseball.
You're joining Library on the Go. We bring stories and adventures to you. I'm Ms. Laura.
And I'm Miss Barbara.
Of the Cortez Public Library. And today Miss Barbara has, I believe, two stories for you?
Yes.
Two stories for you.
This first one is a baseball story. That's why we picked that song. And this is called The Bat Boy and His Violin by Gavin Curtis, published by Simon & Schuster, illustrated by E.B. Lewis. And I'll give you a little background on this. Back when I was a very young girl, baseball became integrated like a lot of other things did, and that's when Jackie Robinson first started playing. And this story has to do with the Negro League. And the Negro League was out there for a long time, but when integration came along, they disappeared. And in some respects, it's kind of a loss because a lot of guys got to play that wouldn't have been able to play someplace else. But this is an upbeat story about the end of the Negro League season. I sashay my bow across the violin strings the way a mosquito skims a summer pond. With hardly any mistakes, Tchaikovsky fills the living room of our house on Tyler Road. When the back door slams and metal cleats stomp onto the kitchen floor, I know Papa is home. "Is Reginald at it again?" he shouts between notes. "Hush up," Mama says. "I just love this one. Cooped up inside all the time, it's a wonder that boy don't sprout mushrooms." I try to play louder than Papa's voice by sawing the music hard. He sometimes comes home in a bad mood because he's the manager of the Dukes, the worst team in the Negro National League. So far, the 1948 season has been the toughest yet. Papa's even having trouble booking games the team is likely to lose. He says it's because all his best hitters and fielders are going over to play for white teams, the way Jackie Robinson did last year. "You know our baby wants to be in a famous orchestra someday," Mama says, following Papa into the living room. "Well, right now the Dukes could use a bat boy, and I think it'll do Reginald some good to get out of the house. We'll get him a uniform and everything." I stopped playing. "What about my practice?" I ask. "Don't you remember? I have a recital next month in the basement at the church." "You can rehearse between innings. Tending to bats don't take up no whole lot of time." Papa pretends to swing one at an invisible pitch. "Anyway, you do a good job, and I'll let you have your fiddle recital right here." I smile because our living room is bigger than the church basement. "I prefer to call it a violin," I say. Papa doesn't hear. He's too busy admiring the trophy cabinet. "Heck," Papa says, "this might even inspire you to become a ball player the way your old man was." The next morning, I ride with Papa and the Dukes to Cleveland on the team's rickety old bus. We get to the field for our game against the Buckeyes, and the bleachers are already packed with their fans. Mr. Forrest, the shortstop, is the first one up. I want to do a good job, so I bring him 6 bats to choose from. It's too many, and they roll out of my hands and make Mr. Forrest stumble like he's skating on ice. He lands flat on his backside, making the crowd howl like they've just seen a circus clown performance. One at a time, boy. Papa's face is all crinkled. Mr. Forrest gets up and misses the ball three times. Nobody else falls, but the next two outs come quickly. The Dukes take the field, and I notice that some of the bats are scuffed from Mr. Forrest's cleats. I remember the polish I use on my violin, and I buff the bats clean with a towel until they shine. I lean them with the others evenly in a row against the fence, standing beside them ready for when it's the Duke's turn to bat again, praying nothing more goes wrong. "Starting to get the hang of it, ain't ya?" Papa says. "Yep," I say, rocking heel to toe and toe to heel. Mr. Mosley, the third baseman, tips his cap because I hand him a bat. When he swings at the pitch, the bat slips out of his hand and misses the umpire's head by no more than an inch. "I'll pass out the bats," Papa says after the umpire has calmed down. Papa grumbles under his breath because the umpire makes him rub dirt on each bat. "Can I help?" I ask. "Why don't you relax a spell on the bench? It'll give you a chance to fiddle." "You mean violin?" "Just keep it low. Lord knows I don't need nothing making my headache worse." And Papa takes his cap off and uses it to wipe the sweat from his face. I play Swan Lake the way I feel, sad and quiet. But I'm not clumsy with my violin. I'm careful, glancing only one time at the music I know by heart. In the last measure, I pull my bow slowly to hold the final note long. "That sure was something pretty," said Mr. LaRue, the center fielder, who is waiting on deck. "Kind of makes the hairs on the back of my neck do a jig." "Thank you," I say, a little embarrassed that anyone had listened. "You're up, LaRue," Papa calls. His headache must have disappeared because a smile crosses his face. "How about doing a jig with that bat and getting a hit?" As Mr. LaRue steps up to the plate, I start to play again. He lets the first pitch go past him, but swings hard on the next. "Run," Papa yells, because Mr. LaRue sends the ball towards the outfielder. Before he can reach first base, the ball leaves the park. He takes his time and does a kind of hop around the field while I play until he gets back to home plate. Mr. Irvin, the catcher, bats next, and I play Mozart. And the same thing happens again. It happens with the left fielder, the second baseman, and the third baseman, too. I'm bushed by the ninth inning, but the Dukes have beaten the Buckeyes 7-4. It's the first game they win in months. "Ain't this a talented boy," Papa says, and massages my arm instead of the pitcher's. Each day I like being the bat boy more than the last. Papa handles the bats, and he lets me play my violin as much as I want. Besides that, the Dukes have stopped losing. I haven't seen Papa this happy since he was a player. 3 weeks into our winning streak, Papa makes an important announcement. "We got us a game with the Monarchs." I'm the only one not cheering, so I ask, "Are they any good?" "Any good," he said. "Why, they're the best colored team there is." "I thought we were," I say. "If we beat them Monarchs, we will be. Folks are saying now that baseball's becoming integrated. The Negro Leagues won't be around forever. The season's coming to an end, and this might be the Duke's last chance to make a real mark, make a name for ourselves." Papa lifts me up onto his shoulder. "Good thing we got us a gifted little bat boy." That night before the big game, Papa can't find a hotel in town that will accept the Dukes. "We don't exactly cotton to colored sleeping in our beds," one white clerk says. "Y'all gonna have to look elsewheres." "Thank you kindly, just the same," Papa says, tipping his cap. "I reckon our bus will do us fine." We park on a field outside the stadium, and Mr. LaRue grills catfish and corn on the cob. After dinner, fancying their chances of winning a pennant makes the team too jittery to sleep. So I play them a lullaby Mama sometimes hums to me before bed. Reginald, Papa says when the sound of snores join the sound of crickets, you got a knack. That fool clerk should have heard you're pretty fiddling. Violining, I tell Papa before falling asleep on his belly. The next day, the sun is high and little shade can be found once the game has gone into extra innings. I play my best, but nothing seems to work, at least not for the Dukes. I play Beethoven, and Mr. Forrest and Mr. Mosley both hit balls that seem to fly right back into the pitcher's glove. I play Mozart, and Mr. LaRue is tagged out at home. But when I play Bach with the game tied, two outs, and Papa very nervous, Mr. O'Neill from the Monarchs knocks a high curling wallop into deep left field. I stop playing just in time to see the ball easily clear the fence. The Dukes lose 18-17. The team congratulates the Monarchs and heads for the showers. No one says anything when they walk past me. Papa looks sad as he gathers up the equipment. I want to help him, but I go straight to the bus instead, wondering if the church basement is still available for my recital. Son, Papa finally says on the quiet ride home, play something happy. And he takes the violin down from the baggage rack and hands it to me. We could all use a little cheering up. I was afraid you wouldn't like my music anymore. I twist the pegs and make sure it's tuned. Of course I still like your music. Papa sits in the seat and pulls me up on his lap. It sure helped us get a lot further than I thought we could without our best players. Shoot, when I shut my big mouth and listened, I loved what I heard. I love you, though, most of all. Win or lose, Negro Leagues or not, ain't no ball game ever going to change that. I love you too, Papa, and I hug him, and then I play the minute waltz over and over again. A week later, baseball season is over, and at last I perform my recital. The only sound heard through our house on Tyler Road is the softness of a Schubert sonata, with no mistakes. Mama, Papa, the Dukes, and their wives fill the first four rows of our crowded living room. You folks must be right proud of Reginald, I hear Mr. LaRue whisper. He sure plays a powerful fiddle. Papa smiles and puts his arm around Mama. Sure does, he says. Except we prefer to call it a violin. The end.
That's a great story, and it's a really good one to stimulate a conversation about how we treat each other.
Well, and also to see how far we have changed in the last 50, 60 years and how different things are. You know, today a clerk at the, or a, anybody at a hotel could not tell somebody they couldn't stay there because of the color of their skin.
Yes.
And this is, as I said, we've come a long ways. We may not be there yet, but we've come an awful long ways in it.
Yes, we have. You're joining Library on the Go. We're on KSJD, Dryland Community Radio, 90.5 and 91.5 FM. The song at the start was I Love Baseball by Jim Cosgrove. And Miss Barbara has another story for you.
This one is called Tomboy Trouble by Sharon Dennis Wyeth, illustrated by Lynn Woodcock Kravitz, published by Random House. My name is Georgia. I am 8. I am a girl, and this is my story. It was summer. I had long hair, and when I played baseball, I got hot. Very hot. I was sweating. So I got a haircut. The hair cutter was a man. I liked his tie. How short do you want it? The hair cutter asked. Short, I said. How short? Asked Mommy. She was there too. Pretty short, I said. This short, said the haircutter. Shorter, I said. Well, maybe not that short, said Mommy. I want to see my ears, I said. Your ears, said Mommy? Really? Yes. The haircutter cut. He cut a lot. I could see my ears, and they looked nice. All done, said the haircutter. Wow, I said. That's short, Georgia, said Mommy. I like it, I said. Mommy paid the haircutter, and someone swept up my old hair. Mommy looks sad, excuse me. Don't worry, the haircutter told Mommy. It will grow back. I don't want it to grow back, I said. We went outside. The weather was warm, but I felt cool. When I was a little girl, said Mommy, I wanted long hair. I put on my baseball cap. Not me. I didn't want my ears to show, said Mommy. Why not? I asked. Mommy said she didn't like her ears. Poor Mommy, I said. I passed a store, and I saw myself in the window. I took off my hat. I looked great. It was the best haircut I had ever had. Summer was over. My family had moved, and I went to school. A new school. At my new school, there were two lines. Excuse me again. I got a little bit of a frog today. At my new school, there were two lines, a line for girls and a line for the boys. I had to stand in the girls' line because I'm a girl. At my old school, there was only one line for everybody. A boy had a baseball cap on, just like mine. He waved at me from the boys' line. I waved back at him. Hey, you, he said. What? He pointed to the boys' line. Come over here. I went over. That's better, he said. What's better, I asked. You have to stand in the boys' line, he told me. I do. I looked at the girls' line. All the girls were standing over there. Of course, said the boy in the baseball cap like mine. You're a boy. I'm not a boy, I said. The boy looked at me. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. He pointed at my shoes. You have on boys' sneakers. He pointed to my cap. You have a boy's cap. These are my sneakers and my cap, I said. I'm a girl, okay? He pointed at my ears. You have a boy's haircut. This is not a boy's haircut, I said. This is my haircut. The principal pointed at us. Please get in line, he said. I went to the girls' line. The boy called out after me, You're stupid!
Why did he call you stupid? Said the girl in front of me.
He wants me to get in the boys' line, I said.
Well, maybe you should, said the girl.
Oh, brother, I thought. The bell rang and we all walked inside. The boy with the cap like mine pushed my arm. Stop pushing, I said. You're stupid, he said. I am not. R2, said the boy in the cap, just like mine. You're a boy, but you say you're a girl. That's stupid. Every day I stood in the girls' line, and every day the boy called me stupid. He wasn't in my class, but I found out his name was Jerry. Jerry and the other boys talked about me. She has a boy's backpack. She has boy's hair. She wears boy's jeans. She has to be a boy. I heard them, but I didn't say anything. Mommy had said to ignore them. But I was getting mad. Then a boy from my class called me George. His name was Michael. I was walking down the hall. Hi, George, Michael said. My name is Georgia, I told him. He knew that. Everyone in my class knew that by now. Your real name is George, said Michael. You're a boy. A boy who's so stupid that he says that he's really a girl. My feelings were getting hurt. I was almost crying. You're dumb, I told Michael, and your name is Michelle. My name is not Michelle, Michael shouted. Yes, it is, I yelled. Just then, Mr. Jones, our teacher, came out to the hall. "What's the problem?" he asked. "She called me Michelle," said Michael. "That's because you called me George," I said. Now I was crying. I couldn't help it. Mr. Jones looked at Michael. "Were you teasing her?" "She's not a her," said Michael. "She's a him." "Go into the classroom," Mr. Jones said to Michael. Then I told Mr. Jones about Jerry. Jerry was the one who had started it. Jerry had called me stupid. Jerry had told Michael and the other boys that I wasn't a girl. "I ought to know whether I'm a boy or a girl," I told Mr. Jones. "Write a letter to Jerry's teacher," said Mr. Jones. "I'll help you." So we did. Jerry's teacher was named Mrs. Weintraub. "Dear Mrs. Weintraub, your student named Jerry is always bothering me. I am a girl, and I told him so, but he keeps saying that I am a boy pretending to be a girl. A girl can wear jeans and have a short haircut and do anything else she wants to, as long as she's not breaking the law. Please tell Jerry to stop. Yours truly, Georgia." I gave the letter to Mrs. Weintraub, and she showed the letter to Jerry. Mr. Jones and Mrs. Weintraub and Jerry and I met out in the hall. Jerry said he wouldn't bother me anymore, even though he still thought I looked like a boy. My new school had a climber. I climbed to the top and jumped down. I hung upside down on the monkey bars. One day at the swings, I met a girl named Rose. "Are you a boy or a girl?" she asked. Rose had on jeans like me, but she was wearing earrings. "I'm a girl," I said. Rose said, "Oh." Then she said, "Why do you play boys' games?" "I don't play boys' games," I said. "Well, you jump down from the climber," said Rose. "That's what the boys like to do." "Well, I like to do it too," I said, "so maybe it's a girl's game." "Maybe," said Rose. "But I think you should grow your hair." I went home. I looked at my ears, and I told Mommy what Rose had said. "I know what," said Mommy. "How about some earrings? Maybe then people will stop asking you if you're a girl or a boy." I tried Mommy's earrings on. "Could I wear just one earring?" I said. "Then I'd look like a pirate." "Maybe we should forget the earrings," Mommy said. "But you could wear a dress." "No way," I said. "Why not?" said Mommy. "Because," I said, "people will look under it." "No, they won't," said Mommy. "They will," I said. "They will look when I jump off the climber." "Well, when your hair grows out," said Mommy, "things will be better." "I don't think so," I said. "Why not?" asked Mommy. "Because when my hair grows out, my neck will be hot." In the cafeteria, I met Robin. Robin had long hair. Robin had a blue lunchbox just like mine. I had never seen Robin before, not even in line. "I like your lunchbox," I said. "I like your lunchbox," said Robin. "Is your lunchbox good for drumming on?" "Mine is." And Robin began to drum. "Hey, that's nice," I said, "drumming on mine. I think my lunchbox is good for drumming on, too." I asked, "Do you play baseball?" Robin says, "Sometimes, but I like to draw, too." Robin and I finished eating lunch. Then we went outside to the playground. We climbed up on the climber and then jumped off. On the monkey bars, Robin and I hung upside down. We really liked that. "What else do you like to do?" I asked. "Do you like to sing in the shower?" "Yes, I love to sing in the shower," said Robin. We sat down on the swings. "Are you a boy or a girl?" asked Robin. "A girl." "Well, you can't be," said Robin. "Why not?" "Because I'm a boy and you're my new friend." "You're a boy?" I said. "Of course I am," said Robin. "You have long hair," I said. "And your hair is short," Robin pointed out. I laughed. "I thought you were a girl," Robin laughed. "I thought you were a boy."
Just goes to show, I said. Goes to show what? Asked Robin. A girl can have short hair, a boy can have long hair, and a girl and a boy can be friends. After school, Robin and I walked home, but first we stopped at the candy store. At the candy store, there was one big line. All the people who wanted to buy something stood in the same line. Some kids came up to Robin and me. Are you a girl? One of the kids asked Robin. No, said Robin, I'm a boy. The kid touched Robin on the head. What's this, then? That's my hair, said Robin. Don't touch. The kid kept on touching, so Robin pushed him. Then somebody snatched my cap off my head. Hey, I said. Are you a boy or a girl? This kid said. She's a girl, a loud voice yelled. It was Rose. Only now Rose had short hair. Rose took my cap away from the kid and gave it back to me. Mind your own beeswax, Rose said. Robin, Rose, and I left the store. People are dumb, said Robin. Don't they have anything better to do, said Rose. Your hair looks good that way, I told her. Thanks, Rose said. It's like yours. Now I play with Robin and Rose. We jump off the climber. We swing and draw, and sometimes we sing a song together. Once we even played baseball with Michael, and he didn't call me George. Sometimes people still ask me the big question, are you a boy or a girl? Most of them already know, but they ask anyway, just because. A lot of people are getting to know me. Soon everybody in school will know who I am. I think that's pretty good for somebody who just moved here. My hair is growing, so tomorrow I'm getting a haircut. Are you sure you want to do that? Asked Mommy. I'm sure. I like short hair, especially on me, and on Rose, but not on Robin, because Robin likes his hair long, so I hope he never gets a haircut. There's a girl in my class named Susan. Are you a tomboy? She asked. I'm no kind of a boy, I answered. I'm just my own kind of girl. The end.
I remember when I was a kid, I was a tomboy, and I had short hair, didn't care what I threw on in the morning, and never, ever looked in the mirror. And that was such freedom.
Oh, for the good old days.
Yes. And that's nice that kids, a lot of kids don't have that concept, but unfortunately a lot do. So you're joining Library on the Go. We're just wrapping up our show. We're on KSJD, Dryland Community Radio, 90.5 and 91.5 FM. And real quickly, we're in the midst of our summer reading program. You can still pick up a log. We have story times on Thursday at 10:30 in the morning, Saturdays 10:30 at the Farmer's Market, and we air here 3:30 every Sunday on KSJD. And Wednesday, July 16th, we're going to be hosting Big Bubble from the Mat, and that's the Millibo Art Theater from Colorado Springs, and that will be at the Cortez Public Library, no charge to you. And we're, I don't even think we have time for the song, but I'll go ahead and start it up. Here we go. I Love Baseball.